There does appear to be a love-hate relationship between the open source community and Microsoft. On the one hand, Linux and open source products are often seen as alternatives to commercial software, particularly the Windows platform. On the other, both Microsoft and open source developers are working on interoperability. This is Cliff Sarin on ComputerWeekly.com podcast, where you can listen to and download interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. In today's program, I will be finding out how online recruitment firm Reed.co.uk evaluated open source technologies against Microsoft products. I'll be speaking to Microsoft about its open source policy, and I'll be talking to an IT analyst at Ovum on Microsoft and open source interoperability. My first guest is Mark Ridley, Head of Technology at recruitment site Reed.co.uk. Mark is featured in Microsoft's latest Get the Facts campaign on how businesses are selecting Windows technologies over open source. But that's not the whole story. Mark, it's been a busy few months for you. What have you been seeing on the site?
We always see high levels of traffic in January. It's a busy time for job seekers. And unfortunately, that trend has continued.
How significant is the site?
Over the years, really, Reed.co.uk itself has grown significantly in the value that it's passing back to the business.
What is the technology that runs the site today?
We're largely a Microsoft house. We're focused around using Windows Server 2003, SQL Server 2000 and SQL 2005, a mixture of the two, and we also use some Linux.
Now that's an interesting story. You did an evaluation of Linux against Windows and SQL Server a few years back. Do you want to tell me a bit about how that went?
Absolutely. The project itself was really born out of some issues that we had with dealing with the load and the increased growth. We were there through the dot-com boom and significant increases in the traffic that was being driven to our website. At the time, we were using very monolithic SQL servers, and what we were seeing was that every 2 years, we would have to replace our hardware. What that meant was that in the early days of the hardware, we'd be massively over capacity. We'd have a sweet spot about halfway through the life, maybe about a year's time, where we'd be absolutely perfect on what we needed. But for another year after that, we'd be struggling and scraping to try and find ways that we could really improve efficiency.
Okay, so and how did you tackle the problem with the fact that this hardware was lasting around 3 years or so?
What we did after going through living with this problem for several years, we decided to try and address it differently. What we wanted to do was really try and understand and develop a way that we could move load from our primary database and hopefully intelligently deal with the problem by spitting that load out onto several smaller databases where we could increase that horizontally if we needed.
So what version of SQL Server were you using at this time?
At that time, we were using SQL 2000. We had actually used every version since SQL 6.5 in our very early days of SQL adoption. Essentially, Microsoft's products were really just about staying one step ahead of us in what we needed at the time. Certainly with the move from SQL 7 to SQL 2000, we gained some performance benefits, but we knew that we would be running out of headroom as our usage increased faster than what we felt that we could get with this very monolithic, very single-box approach to the problem.
So SQL Server 2000 must have been showing its age after a while. What did you end up doing?
What we wanted to do was really address the problem by seeing if there were solutions other than just throwing more hardware at it or relying on the next greatest version of a database server.
How did you perform that evaluation?
We started the initial work in the beginning of 2005 and really with a project that we called very creatively New Search. The test itself really took a few stages. The initial stage of that was trying to take apart the search that we had. Essentially, it had grown very organically, it had become a very, very core part of Reed.co.uk's offering. And so what we wanted to do was see if there were any other ways that we could face the challenges that were apparent. So the very first step that we took was actually take it right back to an application design level. And the very first thing we did was to create a new application that was able to interface directly with different database engines.
So you began performing an evaluation. How did you conduct that?
Initially, what we did was, after we'd created our application, which was to be the front end that we actually performed the load tests on, we then started looking at the database layer. What we tried to do to make sure that the tests were going to be completely fair, or as fair as we could make them, was we actually had servers that were ready to be built. and we used the chassis. We built different images onto disks within the servers. So we actually had an image with Windows Server 2000 on it, and also a version with Linux, and this was Red Hat Advanced Server. So we had the two images ready, we built those up, and essentially those servers really slotted in behind our application ready to be tested.
How did the application connect to those two servers?
We literally just used ODBC. So the application literally just understood that it would be calling certain store procedures and they would connect with the standard ODBC drivers.
Did you optimise the build of those servers to get the best performance for your application?
One of the things that we recognised when we were coming into it was that we didn't really have MySQL experts within the company, and this very much formed part of our later financial discussions about which product to choose. What we did was we really did leave them almost as vanilla as they came out of the box. So in the case of SQL Server, which is already reasonably well optimised, that was left as it was. With both Linux and MySQL, we left them in a very, very similar state, very obviously with a good database schema design, which we understood quite well, but without actually going very, very deep into either the operating system or MySQL itself to optimize them.
And technically, what did you find from that evaluation?
We found in the initial tests, SQL Server was returning to our load test environment around 42% more searches a second than Linux and Red Hat.
The other thing with Microsoft technology is that it is a commercial product and you have to license the software and there was a cost associated with that. How did you evaluate the costs and what was the outcome?
Whilst you may not pay for the software itself, and obviously it's an option to take a version that you pay nothing for, certainly in MySQL's case, the options to have increased support, increased patch levels, you actually have to pay for. So we were looking at, to get what we felt was the correct level of service for an enterprise class application, was we would really have to pay very close, slightly less, but very close to the levels we would have to pay for Microsoft licensing.
I guess there's also the fact that you have SQL Server expertise in-house, but you didn't have any MySQL expertise. How did that impact your decision?
That was certainly a very, very large part of it, because one of the things that we looked at, rather than just the licensing costs or the support costs with MySQL, we also factored in how much we would have to pay for staff training to really get people up to the same level that we already were with SQL. Added to that, the fact that our hosting partners, Attender, have very definite Microsoft skills, but at the time they hadn't operationalized MySQL, so we would have had to have done a lot more support in-house. So really there's a business benefit to using the Microsoft product to us at that time.
What are your plans to use Microsoft technology going forward?
At the moment, one of the key things that we're interested in is looking at Longhorn Server and particularly IIS7. Obviously, running a large website, there are a lot of things in the new version of IIS which are looking to be huge improvements over the existing version and really help to give it a lot of things which in the open source movement Apache have had for a number of years now.
So read.co.uk assessed the Microsoft SQL Server against open source MySQL on identical hardware configurations and found that not only did the Microsoft product perform better, it was also as cost-effective as the open source alternative. My next guest, Nick McGrath, Director of Platform Strategy for Microsoft in the UK, speaks to me about how Microsoft now regards open source. In the interview we conducted with Mark Ridley, Mark mentioned some of the things that he was looking at within Read was how other rival web servers like Apache have certain features that he would like to have seen in IIS. But it does seem that that is being sort of resolved and things are happening in that space. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
One of the things that we've realized, if we're ever going to be really successful in the web, is we've got to listen and learn. Listening and learning comes from going out and talking to customers about areas where we need to improve the architecture and the design and the scalability and the reliability of our platform. Now, if you think about IIS and where we're going with Longhorn and IIS 7, it's simple things like making sure that URLs are much more presentable, they're easier to call out with applications, they're more presentable for the end user. These technologies are not necessarily new. Inside of a number of open source projects, we've seen adoption of some amazing features, and I think that's helped to fuel a lot of the growth around open source on the web. And that's an area that we're focused on learning from and listening from, and we're going to deliver some amazing technologies that will help establish our position very firmly on the website, I think.
We heard from Mark about how he did a comparison of MySQL and SQL Server. One of the things that Microsoft does promote quite heavily is on the Get the Facts pages, which is all about why the Microsoft technology is the better solution. What I'd like to ask you is where that strategy fits in with the work that Microsoft is doing in terms of Linux interoperability.
What we heard from customers about 3 or 4 years ago is that there was this constant perception that Linux was free, and that Linux was more reliable and more secure, and Linux was this and Linux was that. And in many respects, that was at odds with what we were hearing from customers. That was at odds certainly with the findings from analysts, both in commission studies that we made as well as in non-commission studies. And that's where we wanted to try and really put our perspective over into the marketplace and the research we had found. And that was where the role of the Get the Facts campaign came in at that stage. Now, over time, I think Microsoft has grown up a lot and listened a lot more when it comes to the open source community. And I think our position when it comes to open source and other technologies is actually evolved as a result of that. Interoperability is now a key focus for the company, both at the operating system level as well as at the application level. And that's where we've also launched new sites to help promote that message. We have a site now designed for IT professionals and developers called Port 25, which is hosted off of our TechNet site. And that's an open site where people can post questions, and our specialists around Linux and open source software that we have actually at Microsoft can provide factual and pragmatic answers.
So we've heard from Mark Ridley at read.co.uk, who uses both Microsoft and open source technologies to run a successful website. And Microsoft's Nick McGrath has explained how demand from end users has been driving a fresh approach to open source. My final guest, Gary Barnett, a research director at Analyst Hast Ovum, discusses how Microsoft's relationship with the open source community has been changing and what this means in terms of your open source strategy. So Gary, Get the Facts. Are they getting in the way of open source interoperability?
You don't want to be defining your strategy about whether one vendor or another is going to be working better together. The Get the Facts message is probably going to go away rather than get in the way, because that was then, this is now. The discussion is moving on. In some respects, you could say that Microsoft's relationship to open source has been a bit like going through the five stages of grief. They began with a certain amount of denial that open source existed or was relevant. They went through anger, creating debate and FUD around open source. Then an element of bargaining, depression, and finally, I think, Microsoft's coming out of that with a much clearer and much more improved attitude to open source. Are they going to be best buddies? Probably not for the foreseeable future. But I think if you're trying to predict Microsoft's future attitude to and towards open source, you've got to bear in mind a couple of things. Microsoft is a fantastically pragmatic company, and if it's in their commercial interests to support, interoperate with, integrate with, embrace a different standard, they undoubtedly will. And you can be sure that there is plenty of effort going on behind the scenes in Microsoft's development labs looking at how to best interoperate and integrate with third-party software solutions, including solutions from the open source community. So I think that actually as time moves on, Microsoft's willingness to and ability to interoperate with open source products is certainly going to get better and better.
And there have been rumours in some parts of the internet that Microsoft is doing some very clever things in the labs with Linux.
Yes, I mean, hear all sorts of great stories about versions of Microsoft Office that run on Linux in some dark lab in Redmond, and it wouldn't surprise me. Making sure that your media player, that your media servers are deployable to and accessible from the widest range of technologies, it makes obvious commercial sense. At the same time, it doesn't make sense for Microsoft to unveil a whole raft of open source friendly products tomorrow and immediately encourage a mass migration away from their operating system to another. But what you can do is you can expect Microsoft to watch the evolution of Linux on the server, and if it ever starts happening on the desktop. And Microsoft's going to respond in a very, very commercial and very, very pragmatic way as that evolves.
Thank you for listening. Please join me again on www.computerweekly.com/podcasts.